Susie's right, Stretcho. Look.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of Marvel by the Month. My name is Brian Stratton.
And mine is Rob Milne.
And Rob, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but Valentine's Day is this Friday.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
As usual, I don't know. I'm aware of nothing.
So you have made no Valentine's plans?
Well, so actually, I have some plans.
Okay.
Barb made most of the plans, of course. Well, but we will be in San Francisco just the day after seeing Mr. Bungle play.
That's outstanding.
So we have some good San Francisco love for our Valentine's Day. And we're going to the Stinking Rose, which is an Italian food place that's named after garlic. And you smell like garlic when you're done.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
I may have some Valentine's Day plans, but I'm actually not going to talk about them right now because I don't know if you noticed, but our wives are here.
Oh, God. I thought somebody was in the car with me on the way over here.
Yeah. Well, you're a very large man, and it's easy to overlook that. So I guess we should introduce them. I'm very excited to announce that my wife, Sarah Stratton, is here.
And my wife, Barb Allen, is here.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us.
And we do have Valentine's Day plans. Or not day. We're going to Promsy at Omsy.
That's right. We do have Valentine's plans. But that ruins the bit. So I just wanted, first of all, to reassure you, this is not the only Valentine's thing that we have in the works for you both. So as you may or may not be aware, we have a live show coming up at Books with Pictures on February 29th. And that's also going to be our season finale for the second season of Marvel by the Month. To make all the timing work out, we needed to have one more episode in the month of February, and this is it. I should also mention that Sarah is present for every episode that we do. She just has to be very quiet upstairs while we're doing it, which is not the most romantic thing. So I thought it would be nice to actually bring you in because you know, directly or indirectly put up with a lot of stuff to make this thing happen. So
I'm stuck upstairs with those cats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's your worst life. They're just all piled on top of you while you're reading.
But I do get to go to the live taping and I don't have to be quiet because I'm going to be tabling with our son Jack.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And selling all kinds of really cool Marvel by the Month gear.
Oh, you're our merch person.
Yeah, they're going to be our merch team. Yeah.
Sweet.
So come to the show. Meet my wife. You'll like her a lot more than you like me.
That's how it works with Barb, too. And I'm pretty sure Barb's going to come. She hasn't confirmed yet.
I'm going to do security.
Well, at some point, we won't. I don't think we'll be able to do it on this show because the venue just... It's not set up for it, but we do have to do a live show and have the live version of the Marvel by the Month theme.
Oh, yeah.
Because Barb is the voice of the live theme, which is, it's the best theme in podcasting.
Oh,
it is.
Well, yeah. And also Rob sings too.
But I mainly just yell like, you know.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's me.
Which he does periodically in his everyday life.
Yep.
So, yeah.
That's great.
Yep.
Uncanny. It just scares people. Yeah.
It really is fantastic, Barb. It's I enjoy listening to it every time I hear it. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
When you said that, I was like, crap, which instrument am I going to learn? Actually learn? Because I, you know, just record those things really fast. Don't remember how it goes. Yeah. Don't remember what key it's in.
We might have to get that accordion repaired.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking once we get into like 90s X-Men comics and like Gateway shows up, you could maybe master the didgeridoo.
Oh, God.
I haven't done the math, but isn't that like 2070?
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to live to see that.
Also, does anyone really master the didgeridoo? I mean, I don't really know. Probably.
What would that sound like?
Well, that's the thing. Is like you'd actually have to be a didgeridoo master to be able to tell the difference.
Yeah, I believe it would sound like...
It's all about the woo-woos you don't play.
You're going to get some letters over this.
Yeah, we don't have enough listeners to go.
I think I've said didgeridoo-don't before on here. It's not like a really hard stance to take.
Yeah.
You know.
Well... this has been fun. At some point we should talk about comic books. So here's the gimmick. In honor of this holiday, this Valentine's Day holiday that was invented to sell greeting cards and chocolate. At least where I grew up in the frozen Northeast, it was, I think, invented to convince couples not to murder each other in the dead of winter. We are taking another look at a few issues that we've already covered on the podcast so far. This time we're doing it with our wives. We're going to be sipping some wine. We're going to be eating some chocolates. I hope you don't have misophonia, because this is going to be a rough episode for you. So I guess let's start out. What is your familiarity with Marvel stuff generally? Like, where do you come at it from? I know you have to put up with a bunch of us talking at you about this, but
I feel like I'm on like a BBC show.
Where Barb, you like, literally work at a public radio station.
No, I don't. I have a lot of interaction with Marvel, which is Rob. That's it.
You have an X-Men pinball table in your home.
Yep.
Did you ever read comics when you were a kid?
I wasn't allowed to read comics.
Whoa.
I was able to read some very limited Disney stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was not okay because...
Those ducks aren't wearing pants.
Because the ducks aren't wearing pants. It was complicated, but yeah, I was not allowed. I tried, and then it didn't work out. So but also Rob and I have known each other since we were very, very young. So I did have a lot to do. We went to the comic book store together.
Yeah.
And
I think you went to at least one Coliseum con with boxes, just so when I'm like excited about buying a new Wolverine shirt or something.
Yep.
And you were around my dad and my brother too, so you heard it was nothing but comic book nonsense around our house.
There was a lot of comic book nonsense.
Did it just after a while just start to sound like Charlie Brown's teacher? Like just wah 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 wah. Wolverine, wah 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 wah.
Telekinesis.
Not at all. And Sarah?
Yeah, Sarah. Let's throw to Sarah. Beyond all of the Marvel nonsense that I force you to, I think you have seen almost every Marvel movie in the theater because I keep dragging you out to those.
I feel like you made sure that I saw every movie when one was coming here. Like, oh, you didn't see that last one. We're gonna have to watch it.
And let's watch the one before. Again. Yeah.
And so I'm up to date on all of the movies. But before Brian, my exposure was probably Christopher Reeve Superman for DC.
Mm-hmm.
I know enough now to know that there's a DC and a Marvel. There's a difference. But before that, comic books really were not on my radar at all. I started a little bit getting into graphic novels kind of around the time we met, which was a long time ago. And then once, you know, I met you, I ended up reading quite a bit more. You introduced a lot more to me. But that all being said, I really didn't read any Marvel comics until quite recently.
Okay.
The past week.
Like the past week.
Yeah. Right.
So, like, without getting into the specifics of the issues, which we'll get into in a little bit, what did you think? That's a very pregnant pause.
They were written in the 60s.
Yeah.
For 12-year-olds. I say that to comfort myself.
But for 12-year-olds, sure. But also, I mean, it obviously for adults, because like people still are embracing them to today. So it's yeah. And another thing that I should say about my comic book history is my dad had Superman number one.
Whoa.
Yeah. Wow. And he was the oldest of 10. And when he went into seminary.
Wow. Again.
His mom threw away all of his comic books.
Oh, no.
Yep. So I think that might be why I wasn't allowed to read comic books, because it was really heartbreaking.
Well, it's because of moms like that that Superman number one is worth what it's worth.
I know.
Sarah, what'd you think?
When I was younger, I very much bought into kind of some of these extremely old ideas around love. And I think we should point out that the issues we read were about relationships and love. If you mentioned that, I apologize.
But, I probably didn't. I'm not a very good host.
But reading them, they're just so young, and I remember kind of thinking but that's how it was when I was really quite young. And that's why I was kind of like, these have to be written for 12-year-olds. Although I do know some grown people that have kind of thought the same way as a lot of these these love stories pan out or don't pan out. But what the one thing that I really delighted in and I was really surprised by was how much I enjoyed the art. I know Jack Kirby is an amazing artist. However, I'm often distracted by that. And I wasn't distracted at all. Like, I really was just enjoying it thoroughly. I mean, there's just, it's all just so fantastic.
Well, great. Well, let's go ahead. We're going to take a little break, and then we will kick off our journey into the 1960s Marvel version of Love here on Marvel by the Month. Welcome back to our Valentine's Day episode of Marvel by the Month. The plan here is that we are going to revisit some of the issues that we have already talked about in the podcast, but we're going to examine the romantic relationships in them because this is a time for love. We have our wives here in the studio with us who are being subjected to early 60s Marvel Comics, the most romantic Valentine's Day we could come up with.
It's kind of painful.
It's pretty good. The first issue that we're going to revisit is Journey into Mystery number 97. The story is called The Lava Man. This one was written by Stan Lee with art by Jack Kirby, inked by Don Heck. It was published in October 1963. So to refresh your memory, listeners, the Lava Man has come to New York to conquer it. He's a man made of lava. If that wasn't
clear. He still has like wrestling trunks on, though.
Yeah, he's got fireproof wrestling trunks. and Thor is the only one who can stop this guy. While this is all happening, Thor's alter ego, Lame Dr. Blake, is having some problems in his love life. What are those problems? Well, Thor's father, Odin, has forbidden him to marry a mortal woman or even to reveal his secret identity to her. So that's obviously causing a lot of problems for him and Nurse Jane Foster, who he's in love with.
Who's also his employee.
Who's also his employee, there's which is that. An important component of this story. Let's first of all, let's get some high level thoughts on this issue. Sarah, Barb. what did you think about the Lame Dr. Blake, Nurse Jane Foster relationship from the glimpse you got here?
A lot.
Yeah. What do you think of Lame Dr. Blake, first of all?
I adore that he has to be referred to as Lame Dr. Blake every single time he is brought up. How's Dr. Blake? Who?
Yeah.
You mean... Lame Doctor. Oh, yeah.
It's like
there's 12
Dr. Blakes and they just, refer to Lame Dr. Blake.
Well, there have to be at least a dozen Dr. Don Blakes in the United States, right? This is the lame one.
I think one of the things that stood out to me a lot in this, the story was that her new employer has to show up at her old employer's place to say, I'm taking her from you. I've never had that happen. So... That was new. Right. I've never talk about rubbing it in.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I guess that, like, to summarize, so what happens here is Lame Dr. Blake is going to he's reached a point where he wants to tell Jane Foster how he feels. He decides then he has second thoughts as he's saying it. And he like aborts at the last second. And then Jane gives her notice, and then winds up hooking up with Dr. Bruce Andrews, who, as Sarah mentioned, comes to Blake's office to say, she's with me now, pal. So the blending of the employer romantic angle, how do you feel about that?
I feel like I'm watching Mad Men.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a soap opera. Yeah. All of these are soap operas.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was something that I didn't know. I thought, it's all action, but no, it is a soap opera with some action added in. Mm-hmm. That's all they are.
Yeah. I thought what might be fun, and I'm willing to admit this is not going to be fun for anyone except me. I thought it would be great to maybe do a dramatic reenactment of certain scenes from these books. So early on in the story, Lame Dr. Blake has his almost proposal, and then... he winds up changing into Thor and has a conversation with his dad, Odin. And I thought we could reenact that. Sarah, would you play the role of Jane Foster.
Sure.
And then I will be Lame Dr. Blake. And we'll just take it. So on page 4, it starts with Jane Foster saying, "Now, what was it you wanted to say to me?"
Are you going to speak the thoughts?
And Rob, you can do, I'll speak the thoughts, but you can do the stage directions, the captions.
Okay, yeah. I will.
"Now, what was it you wanted to say to me?"
"Thinking. And yet I don't dare tell her my true feelings. If by some wonderful miracle she should agree to marry me, I would have to reveal that Thor and I are one and the same. And that secret is not mine to divulge, not without the permission of Odin, my father, Lord of the Gods of Asgard. Come to think of it, Jane, perhaps this is not the right time."
"I think I know what it is you're trying to say, Doctor. You've wanted to say it to me for months. I can feel it. But why? Why don't you?"
"Oh, Jane, my darling, if only I could. But give me just one more day. There is one thing I must do first, and then..."
"Yes, Doctor, I know. There's always just one more thing. Well, a girl can't wait forever. Don Blake, not for a man who hasn't enough gumption to speak his own mind. Good night, Doctor."
And at that soul-searing moment, the tortured human with the gnarled walking stick makes his decision. Grimly, he stamps his cane upon the floor as a powerful thunderclap fills the room.
"I can postpone it no longer. It must be done." Great Foley work, Barb.
Thank you.
"But I must do it as Thor, son of Odin."
A microsecond later, the mighty thunder god faces a half-open window, and then...
"Noble Odin, show thyself to thy son. I summon thee, O my immortal father." And you're going to have to be Odin.
I think Barb should be holding.
Barb, you want to be Odin? Barb,
yeah. "Speak then, mighty Thor. I grant thee leave to petition me."
"My heart is torn with love, my father. I crave permission to marry a mortal girl, the nurse of Dr. Blake, the one known as Jane Foster."
"Have you taken leave of your senses? The god of thunder marrying a mortal? It is impossible. Petition refused."
"My father, wait. Hear me out. You must..." Too late. He's gone. So, yeah, so there you go. Adult man having to ask his dad permission to date a lady.
I did really enjoy that. You just came right up towards Randy the Macho Man Savage with your Odin. Yeah. I should also point out our cat is named Odin.
Yes, so, that's right. Yep.
My car is named Mjolnir. It's an electric car. It runs on thunder.
Can you lift it?
I can't.
Because you're not worthy.
Wait. He hasn't tried.
Oh, so, true. Okay. Yeah.
Let's just go ahead with that.
Yep. Yeah. So we summarized this earlier, but then this progresses. Jane Foster gets super frustrated with Lame Dr. Blake.
Thank you.
She says, "Look, I'm giving my notice, Dr. Boyfriend. I'm going to go work for this guy." And she winds up choosing to work for him because when the Lava Man is ransacking New York, obviously, Lame Dr. Blake has to be Thor. He has to, you know, save the day. But Dr. Bruce Andrews takes care of Jane and keeps her safe from the Lava Man, which Lame Dr. Blake could not do because he can't be in two places at once.
And obviously, Nurse Jane can't, you know, take care of herself, I guess.
Yeah, he does.
So, yeah. So at the end of this issue, how did you walk away feeling about Jane, about Dr. Blake? What were some of the things that you thought coming out of this one?
At the end, he's really shamed. I think, let's see here. The last thing that she says to him in this story is, "Dr. Andrews drove me to the suburbs, looked after me. A woman wants a man, Dr. Blake, not a timid mouse. And so I'm leaving."
Mm-hmm.
And they show him, you know, gazing out at a window.
Sorry to interrupt, but Dr. Andrews, like with a cutting follow-up, says, "Don't worry, Blake, you'll find another nurse."
Yeah. It's so in the end, he's like, "But I'm, you know, but I'm sore. I'm the muddiest, but I can't reveal this." And it's just a lot of these like continuously come up to the edge. all of them. So
I think it's also speaking to the 1960s-ness of this, that the thing she really loves is that he brought her out to the suburbs, which, like, if you remember from your Mad Men watching, like, that's what all of the office girls was to get married and then move out to the suburbs.
It's a nightmare.
You never take me to the suburbs.
Every time I want to take you to the suburbs, it's because
the Lego store
is like, the Lego store is out there. Yeah. And you don't want to go to the suburbs. Like, I'm getting a lot of mixed messages here. This is a terrible Valentine's Day episode.
Which makes it. And then
Brian stormed off and we continued.
Door slam.
Oh, man. Well, does it change your opinions of the story at all? If I was to tell you that, 50 years later, Jane Foster winds up becoming Thor.
Ooh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
50 years later.
Yeah, like it was.
Like in the last couple years.
Yeah.
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 You've come a long way, baby.
Yeah. On that note, let's take another break. And we will resume with our next issue, where we're going to talk a little bit about young teenage love. Here on Marvel by the Month.
Okay, welcome back to Marvel by the Month. I'm going to set us up for The Amazing Spider-Man number 9, The Man Called Electro. That's his noise.
Yep.
This is written by Stan Lee, art by Steve Ditko, published February 1964. Just set up the basic premise of the issue, and then we're gonna dive into your thoughts and feelings,
especially feelings, because we're sensitive.
We suck. Peter Parker's Aunt May is gravely ill again, as usual.
Mysterious illness.
She's like 100 in these early comics, by the way. There's lots of different Aunt Mays, and there's no like more elderly Aunt May than the beginning Aunt May.
Yeah. And like if a damp breeze blows over her, she's in the hospital.
Yeah. So she's gravely ill. Peter Parker needs to be by her side. But a new supervillain named Electro is on the loose. That was Electro's noise, the real noise. And only Spider-Man can stop him. So meanwhile, a teenage romance has been blossoming between Peter Parker and Betty Brant, who works at the Daily Bugle. They're both pretty damaged. Peter's uncle Ben was recently murdered by a burglar that Spider-Man could have stopped. And we learn a little later that Betty has been supporting her brother, who has gotten mixed up with organized crime. So this is the first time they have any extended time together outside of the Daily Bugle offices.
Also worth mentioning, Peter's still in high school at this point. So he's like 16 or 17 years old. I think Betty's like a year or two older than him. So very young characters.
We're actually playing the Spider-Man video game on PS4. So he is still pretty much that age, just so you know.
Yeah.
I mean, even when he's out of college. Yeah.
Just wanted to add that.
Sarah, what did you think of the story?
I thought it was really interesting. In so many stories, like you mentioned earlier, Aunt May was extremely old, and there's something about like grandmas having to be really old.
Yeah.
And it's the older I get, the more I'm like, that's just not true.
Do you prefer old grandma Aunt May, or do you prefer Marvel movies Aunt May?
Lily Tomlin Aunt May?
Oh, you're right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lily Tomlin was the voice of Aunt May. Look at you with the poll. That's awesome. Right?
Suck it, Brian.
So, yeah, she's my favorite Aunt May. Marissa Tomei, second. Number two. Solid. Sure. She's solid.
Well, Lily Tomlin is like my favorite everything. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So this episode, it was cool to read about the tension between Spider-Man and J. Jonah Jameson. Mm-hmm. That's a mouthful.
I know.
Yeah.
Fun name to say, though.
And so that was pretty cool. And just like there's a real sweetness to Spider-Man, which I enjoyed. There was a line here that Electro says to Spider-Man. It's one of his thought bubbles that I just thought was
the
really
funny.
The
way that you like psyched yourself up to say the name Electro was just great.
But there's a couple of... what are these windows called again?
Panels.
Panels. Thank you. More Electra saying, and anyone stupid enough to touch me while my body is in electric shock condition has only himself to blame for the consequences. And Spider-Man's all, ah, and he's on the ground. And then in the next panel, I didn't mean to, it's the thought bubble. I didn't mean to do that, but it was his own fault. He didn't give me a chance to explain the danger of touching me. Well, with him out of the way, no single human is strong enough to challenge me.
That's pretty romantic.
Yeah, that's like he's like a. That's the closest to sympathetic villain, and
the only moment where Spider-Man. He's like kind of a little human.
Yeah.
For just a second.
Yeah, it actually takes Spider-Man a while to get around to fighting Electro because Peter Parker has to be with Aunt May while she's ill and in the hospital. And this is like all the hospital scenes are basically where Betty and Peter start having these interactions, and like Rob mentioned, this is the first time they're hanging out outside of the Daily Bugle where she works and where Peter sells photos.
But Betty like just shows up. She hears about it and shows up. So when Peter gets there, Betty's there with his aunt, which is a pretty good sign that one, she likes Peter and she has a heart. So yeah,
she's family oriented.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what happens in the story and in the last story that we discussed is that they rely so much on that not being in two places at once.
Oh, yeah.
It's such, I mean, does that happen like every time?
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Pretty constantly, yeah. Yeah, it was a trope in 60s comics and even still like into the 70s and well into the 80s that like all superheroes had a sacred identity because there wasn't really a well thought out reason, but very few of them didn't. So... Yeah, but yeah, and that like so many plots revolve around. It's like, oh, I've made a commitment over here, but supervillain is on the loose, and I need to deal with this because only I can. And yeah, so.
And Peter Parker has that to the nth degree.
Yeah,
he has some of the most ridiculous things happen where one girl sees him with another girl while he's trying to make an appearance where Spider-Man was out of place, so people won't think he's Spider-Man. Like just insane nonsense. Yeah. Barb, you have a thought on this Betty Brant situation or just this comic in general?
I do have a thought. I shared it with you, my dear husband, while I was reading these comics. I said, Super Friends makes so much more sense now, which because I hadn't read the comics from the 60s, but I did watch Super Friends, Hall of Justice, Saturday morning cartoons in the 80s. And Superman explains everything as he's doing it before he's doing it. And my dear husband does as well. And I'm like, God damn it. I mean, gosh darn it, Rob. Why are you super friendsing me? And this is why.
Yep.
It makes a whole lot more sense. The other thing I wanted to mention was I did extra credit homework when I was reading. And I was reading The Spider's Web, which was the letters page. And one of the things that was really cool was somebody wrote in and said, why do you not use just a period at the end of a sentence? Why is everything an exclamation point? And Stanley wrote back and said, because it's not guaranteed to come through in the print. So sometimes the ink isn't going to show up as well. If it was just a period, it would look like there was no end to a sentence, but an exclamation point always shows up.
Oh yeah.
So I thought that was really fascinating. And I know I'm tangenting. That's what I do.
That's great.
That's what we do. Yeah.
High five all around.
Yeah. I would buy Stan's explanation more. Maybe he just got into the habit of always hitting exclamation point at the end of sentences, but I've seen things that were not, that he wrote that were not published in comic books that still are. Like, man, if he was being charged $1 per exclamation point, he'd be broke. So, Peter is, he's with Aunt May. She's in surgery. Betty's there before Aunt May goes into surgery. Once we find out that she does need to have an operation, Betty shows up again at the hospital to wait with Peter Parker. And there's just a couple of panels here that I think Rob and Barb would do a great job of doing a dramatic performance of
page 13.
It's the first two panels on the bottom row. Barb, you'll be playing the role of Betty Brant.
What?
And
I was going to be Peter.
It's fine. We can switch this. Peter, I came to wait with you. I know how difficult it is to be alone at a time like this.
Betty.
Now you have to read what he's thinking.
Maybe I haven't many friends, but one wonderful one like Betty makes up for all I haven't got.
And then the next panel, the two of them sitting on a bench. And so the long minutes tick by as two figures sit in the silent waiting room, each deep in thought, sharing a bond which needs no words to explain.
Disagree. That is exactly like when I read this, I was like, they probably need some words. And I was like,
it's because they were deep thoughts. They really couldn't put them into
like
words.
Jack just... Handy. Do we have to
Jack Handy this? And then I'd also like you to pick up on the next page, page 14, read the bottom row of panels. So Aunt May has come through the surgery successfully. She's made it. But now Peter has to get back to Spider-Manning. So here we go.
Betty, Aunt May is going to be all right. The operation was successful.
Oh, I'm so happy for you, Peter. And now I've got to go. They need me at the office. Mr. Jameson isn't there. He went to cover the detention house riots. Peter, please don't go there to take any pictures. It could be dangerous.
But Betty, the dangerous pics are the ones Jameson pays the most for.
I was afraid of this. You're beginning to enjoy the danger, the excitement, just like someone else I once knew.
I wish I knew. Really, what bothers her? If only she'd tell me someday. And my brow is furrowed.
Again, maybe why they those thoughts did need words.
Yes. So Peter goes to the detention riots. He beats up Electro. The day is saved. And then at the end of the issue, he comes back with a bunch of photos of Spider-Man fighting Electro that he sells to Jameson. Betty's upset with him because he did exactly what she was afraid he was going to do. He went there. He exposed himself to danger and he didn't care about his own safety or well-being. They have a little bit of a fight. He says, look, Betty, I like you better than any girl I've ever known. I wouldn't do anything to hurt you, but you can't stop me from doing what I have to do. And so it looks like, oh, things are on the rocks for Betty and Peter. He goes back to the hospital. He checks in with Aunt May. She's doing great. He leaves the hospital. And for her third appearance at the hospital in this issue, Betty Brant comes running down the sidewalk and she just says, Peter, wait, I'm sorry for what I said. Please don't be angry. And then they walk down the street together.
Again, silently.
Yes.
In
no,
the night.
No words.
No words.
Need
no
be
words.
Spoken yeah. in this situation where they could probably be talking and making some sense of things.
It's also striking what the whole, like, Aunt May feels so used to me in this story, because we really have no idea what's going on with her. And even if I try to make sense of it, like, oh, it's probably, you know, that's not how that would go. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's just to move the story along, but it's just so, like, I like Aunt May. I want to know what's going on with her.
Aunt May is a prop in these
stories. Right. Yeah, she is less than one-dimensional in these stories. Yeah.
Yep. She's
at this
his,
point, yeah.
She's his mother/grandmother figure who's just feeble. And
yeah. I love that she's mother/grandmother.
Yeah.
Yet not aunt.
Yeah, I know.
What?
Yeah. But it's interesting because it takes them a long time to actually get around to talking about, like, what happened to Peter Parker's parents? Like, why is he being raised by his aunt and uncle? Mm-hmm.
Superman killed him.
The first crossover.
Yeah. So what'd you think about Peter and Betty's relationship? And well, let me ask this. Where do you think Peter and Betty's relationship goes from here? If you just had to guess.
Lots of being together, but not talking. So reading this, like, they're both teenagers, but they are not any different than any other characters that I read in this series. So it doesn't stand out to me as, like, it's a young kind of crush, mm-hmm. which I think, in my mind, that's kind of how that would play out. But at the same time, they're dealing with some pretty big things. So maybe they're older than their time. But you can, they both, like you pointed out, they're both kind of damaged, which feels like a little unique to me. So that makes them a little, there's more dimension to them, which I liked.
Rob can tell you that I have a problem with what is the, like, this is what's, it's not real. It's not really happening. That's not possible. Oh. And Rob's like, yeah, it's disbelief, suspension of disbelief. And I'm like, F that.
Yeah.
Did you hear what I said? I said F.
Thank you for not making more editing work for me.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
That is, I mean, that's the problem with even the Marvel movies or anything like that. At least the Marvel movies have at least some of them, although Iron Man 2 didn't go well for us. We went to the theater, and Barb had recently gone to the theater to see Man of Steel with me too, so she was
not happy with
superhero movies at that point. Yeah. And I was like, okay, yeah, I guess you don't need to come to these anymore. So I've watched most of them on airplanes and stuff. But,
don't get me wrong, there are good ones.
Sure.
Yeah.
What's the one that you've watched? Not necessarily the entire movie, but that one scene about 7,000 times.
That would be Thor Ragnarok, after he fights with Hell, and the immigrant song starts playing again. And
For the second time.
Lightning's coming out of his eyes as he jumps onto Bifrost the Rainbow Bridge. I mean, that's the one.
Did your arm hair just stand up thinking about it?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
It is the most beautiful thing.
I love that you know this about him, like the true love.
Like, I need a happy break, and it just watch that scene, and then I'm happy again. It's like meditation, but cooler.
Yeah, but better in every way. All right. Well, just to give you the where this relationship winds up going, they date for a little while, they break up. Betty starts dating a guy named Ned Leeds. Who works at the Daily Bugle. They have some rough times. He turns out to be the Hobgoblin, who's a Spider-Man villain. And I think he dies. I think he gets killed. Yeah. Yep.
So. The Hobgoblin does?
Hobgoblin, yep. Gotcha. Another fun name to say.
And so she's available then.
Yeah.
And does she leave the story? Like, she kind of...
She's around.
She's always, she's always around, yeah.
Yeah. But
how does MJ feel about this?
Well, we haven't even got into the Black Cat part of the video game yet. So, you know, a whole other ball of wax.
Yep.
Or ball of yarn.
Yarn.
Sorry.
Oh.
All right. Well, on that note, let's take a break. We'll come back with our final issue of this episode here on Marvel by the Month. Welcome back to the special Valentine's Day edition of Marvel by the Month. We have one more issue we're going to be talking about. This one is Fantastic Four number 27, The Search for Submariner. This one was written by Stan Lee, art by Jack Kirby, inked by George Bell. It was published in June of 1964. So we've talked about this one on the podcast, but basically here's the setup. So we know that Reed Richards and Sue Storm, they've always been presented as a couple, but it's always been sort of this weird 1960s in between state where they're sort of dating, but it's not a really formal thing. They're not engaged or married, so it's not a serious relationship.
And they don't live together, according to Strange Tales.
No. Yeah. Sue lives in the suburbs with her brother, Johnny Storm, the Human Torch. And maybe their family, but maybe not.
Yeah,
no, not their family, because her dad's in jail.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah. So the other major figure in the story is Namor the Submariner. This is a guy who shows up very early in the Fantastic Four's history. From the very first time he saw Sue Storm, he was totally smitten with her. And he's not the kind of guy who's used to being told no.
Sexy.
Yeah. That's a good look for a dude, especially in 2020. So in this issue, Namor kidnaps Sue to try to convince her to fall in love with him. This is like the third or fourth time he's done this, just for some context.
So that's his move, is kidnapping.
Yeah. And
not convince, but to make. I highlighted one of the panels here where he says, "Never, I shall not leave without you." This is Namor talking to Sue Storm. "Richards has had years to court you, to make you love him." Because that's how that works.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
"All I ask is 24 hours, and I shall have them." Yeah.
So he did ask.
He asked once he'd abducted her.
He's such an ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's just go through this one because there's a lot to unpack mm-hmm. in this issue. So very first page, Reed is demonstrating this crazy machine he's created, which is a thought projector. And so he wears this thing on his head and it broadcasts to everyone around what he's thinking of. And what is he thinking of?
It's Sue in not a lot of clothes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Which is a lot of skin for a Marvel comic mm-hmm. of this time.
Yes.
But she's wearing anything, also shoes.
She's visible.
So
he's a shoe guy.
So seriously, he's like, I'm thinking about her wearing clothes.
We're at a beach. Maybe they're at a beach. Maybe sure. Maybe there's, you know, we're missing some of the context here.
Yeah.
She's not. Nope. No. I read it. We're not.
She's not super thrilled at this, as you can understand, because he's doing this in front of his best friend from college and her brother. And she says, well, Mr. Richards, I would appreciate it if you wouldn't expose your thoughts of me for everyone to gape at. So, yeah, not getting off to a good start here. So then we fast forward a little bit. We see Namor thinking about Sue Storm. And then he shows up at the Baxter Building, which is the Fantastic Four's headquarters.
In a weird green suit.
In a weird green suit. And he takes out the torch and the thing. And he kidnaps Sue and takes her with him. We should also mention that. So after he has, Reed has been super creepy about broadcasting his thoughts of scantily clad Sue. After she storms off, he says, I've been thinking about putting a ring on her finger and I'm going to get it today. So he goes off to do that. That's why he's not there when Namor shows up. He comes back, discovers that Sue's been kidnapped, and he just flies into a rage.
Like, which is very, like, Reed never loses his cool. So this is a very weird issue to see him.
It's very demonstrative. Like, he's like, you really know he loves her.
Yeah.
And he insists upon going alone.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a big deal. I also,
it's a 60s man fight.
When Namor comes to kidnap her, Reed is not there and is fighting with Ben and Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
He's fighting with Johnny. And this line just cracks me up. This is Namor. My body still contains enough inner moisture to render your mild fireballs harmless to me.
It also has the weird ring. Barb was noting to me the sort of homoerotic things that are happening later in the issue, too, mm-hmm. as Namor and Reed are fighting. Just the way they're describing their supple muscles or whatever.
And
it's
that fight is pages.
Yeah, that is the thing that turned me away from superhero comics after a while, is that I was like, I get it. They're fighting. Yeah. Which is weird, because then you realize you're just reading the soap opera at that point. I'm like, yeah, they're going to smash things. But I do like an occasional smash, just not six pages of smash.
Mm-hmm.
So Namor abducts Sue. He takes her to his underwater kingdom. Reed is like, I'm going to go take care of this myself. So we're in Atlantis now. And Namor's making his pitch to Sue. So Sarah, you already read some of this, but would you like to do this this one with me?
Sure.
So let's go to page 10.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take it from the fourth panel. The caption is, and within the walls of the undersea citadel.
Namor, let me out. Do you think you can make me confess I love you by imprisoning me?
I don't want to make you a captive. Why can't you understand? I've never had a chance to plead my cause with you. Never had a chance to date you, to be with you the way Reed Richards has. All I ask is 24 hours. 24 hours to tell you how I love you, to ask you to be mine.
But Reed will find you, and when he does, nothing can save you.
So, still you torment me. Am I never to know? Is it Reed Richards, or is it me you love? Is it his safety you're concerned about, or is it mine?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Mm.
So then the Fantastic Four, the boys from the Fantastic Four show up. Big fight. And fast forward to the end of the issue. So getting to page 22. So now it comes down to it. Sue has to make the decision about who she's going to go with. So let's pick up on Sarah on page 22, the bottom row of panels. So I'll just start with Namor saying, "Richards is lucky that you still felt enough loyalty to him to interfere with my vengeance."
"No, Namor, not loyalty. My feeling was love."
"What are you saying? You can't love him. I've claimed you for myself. You must be mine."
"The one thing an Imperial command cannot affect is a girl's heart. I'm sorry, Namor. Sorry if you misunderstood the sympathy I felt for you. Yes, even the affection I felt. Sorry if you thought I was in love. It was love. But I realize now, Reed is the only man for me. Nothing can ever change that."
And scene.
Everything since I read these comic books within the last 72 hours, I'm like, a girl's heart knows what a girl's heart wants.
Barb keeps saying that to me. And yeah. Between the woman's heart and the inscrutable mind of a woman and all the things they say in these comics, and then and woman's intuition, which is like better than spider sense sometimes. they can be like, "I just felt there was a villain hiding behind that thing because of woman's intuition."
Yeah.
Of a woman's intuition.
Sorry. Right, right.
One thing that stood out to me in all of the things I read was that it reminded me of my six-year-old who explains his jokes. Or when he sees something funny, he's got to explain why it's funny. Mm-hmm. And all of this, this is really text heavy.
Yeah.
And the reason I was saying it was written for 12-year-olds is because there's so much inner dialogue that they feel. They must explain things to you, or it's used as a device to fill in a lot of, like, why did he suddenly jump there? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of interesting to read. And it makes it kind of fun and comical. The Fantastic Four was my favorite out of everything I read. I think because there are four really interesting characters and they're always kind of playing off each other, there was a lot more. It's just really interesting to me. So this is really fun, except, I mean, the pages of fighting got a little, like...
all right.
flip.
Yeah. Barb, what did you think?
About this?
About this entire issue.
Oh, God.
Unpack it, Barb.
Honestly, I was so distracted by the eyebrows, I couldn't really focus.
Those were amazing.
The first time that he took the helmet crown off, I said, "Oh God." And Rob said, "What?" And I said, "He took his helmet off." And he's like, "Oh yeah, the eyebrows." I thought a lot of things. I felt a lot of feelings. It's very complicated.
Do we need to put the thought projector on you?
I said, a girl's heart what a girl's heart needs, or something, I guess. Yeah.
The eyebrows did help me to know that, is it Jason Momoa, the actor?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, he's like in that sweet spot, I just want to say, with where his eyebrows are. And there is a point at which it can be over the top.
Mm-hmm. It crosses to full Vulcan.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I'm actually really curious to get your perspectives on the female characters generally across these stories. So, like, this is something Rob and I have talked about on the podcast before, but, like, a lot of times when we're reading these things, I think if I'm a 12-year-old girl in 1964, why am I reading Marvel comics?
There was no reason for them to have read any of this. Like, that would be just, maybe they were. I wasn't there, but the boys, I think, were reading them and thinking, this is what girls want and this is what girls think. But obviously, I didn't read a whole lot of other comic books. And we've just been assigned these ones. So,
yeah, which are, I think, pretty representative. I think it's a fair representation
of this whole era of comics. I mean, I know you've read Preacher in more modern comics that are totally different.
I have read very, very different comics than this.
Preacher made it into our wedding vows.
Mm-hmm. So. Amen.
Yeah, yep. It's on our, I programmed it into the pinball machine in the credits that roll there. It just says like Barb plus Rob till the end of the world. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know it was in your vows too. Yeah.
Yeah. That and baseball.
Yep.
There's a lot of baseball in our wedding. It's so weird.
Yeah, it's very, very baseball-centric wedding.
Somehow. We did no vows. We just we signed the papers on a lovely deck on a beach, listening to Tenacious D.
Interpretive dance.
Yeah, Tenacious D was playing at the time. I remember it very clearly.
No, our vows were keep the bruises off the face, I think.
Which you failed at. I have not seen. I got a black eye right now.
You do have a black eye right now.
But that was the god of thunder.
That was Odin. Our cat taught me wisdom by trying to take my eye.
You know, to back up a moment and talk a little bit about what you asked about, what it was reading, being a woman reading these. And the men... Yes, there was this love element, but God, they just had so much more to do. They're like, yes, this is important to me. I do love her, and you know, I got to work this out. But, oh my God, like I gotta run over here, and I gotta do this, and
I gotta fight this lava man.
Yeah, there's a lot of other things going on. Whereas the women, their only thing that they really had going on was just this frustration with like, he's never gonna tell me, or this is never gonna go anywhere. So a lot of this, there's a lot of similarities between a lot of the messages I got as a young girl for me. And there's just a lot more like fighting and wrestling and things like that in here. But it's really very similar to like Disney things I was seeing. Mm-hmm. So and as somebody who's really visual, I would have loved this simply for how the women are drawn. Because I remember in the Archie comics... Betty and Veronica. Mm-hmm. I just loved looking at them. I tried to draw them. I remember like I did a lot of drawing, and I tried to make elaborate dresses and hair and all this kind of stuff. So if I had seen these as a young person, I think I might have just enjoyed it for that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you really what Archie was really about, but I can still picture Betty and Veronica really well kind of thing.
Well, Archie was basically Peter Parker's life without Spider-Man powers.
Right. That was just
exactly what it was. Yeah.
Also, and more freckles.
Yeah, more freckles.
I mean, it goes without saying, I think that every Marvel comic that we have read so far, all 200 something of them, completely fail the Bechdel test. Like, you never have a moment of two female characters having a discussion that is not about a man. Mm-hmm. There's very few female characters, period, in the stories. And it is sort of a very, I mean, obviously dated, but, you know, kind of, I don't even know how you would describe it, but like the view of love is very simplistic. It's very cliched. It's very, it is not. And what's funny is that like every guy who's working on this, they were all married. I know Stan's relationship with his wife was very strong and endured until they both passed. Same thing with Jack and Roz Kirby. You know, it's not like they didn't understand how
what love is,
what love is, or how like
Jenny,
how a mature and you know, fulfilling relationship looks. It's just that's not what comes across on the page. Well, I always find that really interesting.
Yeah, I think that's also the simplicity that Stan's applying to any conversation, you know.
True.
So but again, I'm not saying that he's writing women well, because he's not, but he's, everything is simplified to this like middle school level.
Yeah.
So romance is simplified to this middle school level. Villains are simplified to a middle school level, except for Doom. Doom's cooler, but we'll get to that sometime.
I have to pretty much find female authors to find women written well. Mm-hmm. I just reread Watchmen and it really stood out to me. I was really kind of frustrated by how Lower E was written. It was definitely better than this, but mm-hmm. still, I felt like, oh, there's just a lot of things that just were not understood. But I get it. I also just read Cosmonauts. Anyone up on that? Mm-hmm. It's about these like space lesbians that do some fighting and they save princesses and set them free.
That is fantastic.
We've come a long way, yeah. baby.
I should say in defense of comics that now there are a lot more women involved in writing and in illustrating and creating.
Of course. So, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And much more, you know, characters with agency that, and characters that aren't all white dudes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And sometime in the last 20 years, you know, the comics world realizes like, oh, wait, ladies are people and we should write them like people.
Mm-hmm. Which is one step ahead of some of America.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I have a question.
Yep.
How would you, as beautiful male humans, who Sarah and I love very, very much, present to us why we should care about these superheroes who make horrible decisions over and over again and make no sense whatsoever?
I think the answer is I would show you comics that were published within the last 10 or 20 years. The first 30, 40 years of Marvel Comics history, I think the way I have always talked to friends of mine who are not comics fans, my explanation is like, well, you didn't discover them when you were a 9-year-old boy. They were written for boys and they were written for young boys. And if you didn't discover them at that age, I think it was a long, long time before it came back around.
It is a reflection of every single thing that was made for what was white America forever, mm-hmm. and especially white male America. So, so the answer is, I wouldn't say, I would never want you to sit and try to read all these and glean something other than, for me, I'm just looking for what is the next weird thing. Like, what is the alien that came through a dimensional hole from somewhere? I'm like, I want to know more about this dimensional hole thing. You know, I'm interested in all the little escapism pieces and not necessarily the punching and the awkward romance.
So we have, as I've mentioned a few times already, a 6-year-old boy, and this is for 9-year-old boys. I'm like, he's 3 years away from that. Would I want him to read this? And I like what you said, Rob, about there's a lot of really cool science fiction aspects here, which are awesome. Mm-hmm. Like Brian was away last weekend and Jack and I watched Into the Spider-Verse for probably the 8th time. So, 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 so good. And I think that aspect is fantastic. And it just like he's got a huge imagination. I want to support that and feed that. But I don't want him to read the dynamics between the men and the women and how the love stories kind of evolve. And it's just so wrong. And I don't want him to kind of soak any of that up.
Right. Well, the new, again, the last 10 years, comics are reflective more, but they're idealistic still. So there's like, there are characters that are amorphous in sexuality. There are characters that are lots of out openly gay. And some of the characters are characters that started in the 60s and finally came out. And then they talk about the problems they're going through.
Mm-hmm. Especially in the last 20 years, you know, 15 to 20 years. Now you've got some absolute A-list female creators who you've got, you know, the Kelly Sue DeConnick's of the world. You've got the Gail Simone's of the world, you know, like folks who are doing mainstream superhero comics they are women and they are helping to redress a lot of the things that were overlooked for so many years. And you have guys who are, you know, very progressive about their approach. You know, it took a long time culturally. You know, I mean, how old is the concept of the Bechdel test? Like, I don't even know if that's 2 decades old, you know?
I think so. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it sounds a little bit like a cop out, but
And it's what...
It's like media didn't realize that women's like, were humans.
If you swap he for she and say this thing, does it make any sense? Just simplify for, you know.
Well, there's another concept that I think Gail Simone came up with this one, who's a great comics writer, who was very nice to us at Rose City. She came up with the concept of fridging a woman. They introduced a new Green Lantern character in the 90s who had a girlfriend. And basically the only point of this girlfriend was when they were introducing this new Green Lantern character was that she got murdered and stuffed in a fridge. And that was his motivation for going and being the hero and getting revenge and doing justice. And so like she basically anytime she saw a female character who was only introduced so that they could be sacrificed to give the male hero motivation, she just used it as shorthand. She's like, yeah, you just fridged her.
Dang, Braveheart just went down even further than what Mel Gibson did.
Okay. Well, that was our special Valentine's Day episode of Marvel by the Month. Sarah, Barb, thank you so much for subjecting yourselves to even more of this nonsense than you usually do.
Yeah, and as we've talked about, the historically aged nonsense. So thank you.
It was really fun.
I can't imagine what it would be like to be asked to read a bunch of stories from an era where me and people like me just weren't considered fully human, but I really appreciate you going through all this.
I have some Babysitter's Club books I want you to read.
Boy's heart knows what a boy's heart means.
All right. Well, on that note, what do we got to say? Let's shout out the Books with Pictures show February 29th. It's the last day of February. It's a Saturday. It's 6 p.m.
It's barely a day.
It's a bonus day. So anything you do on that day, it's not like it's taking time out of your actual life. and you're going to be hanging out in the best comic store in Portland, Books with Pictures on Division, here in Portland, Oregon.
I can't wait to give you the people's elbow because I am security.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Come down there. Meet all of us. We'll all be hanging out. And I think that's it. Rob, do you have anything else?
No, I mean, we will have the shirts. We talked about it last time. The stay inside and read comics are very proud. I actually am proud of the illustration. So
it's beautiful.
We'll have shirts to sell it'll be nice to meet a few people that actually listen to this thing. Yeah. So please come out.
Absolutely. So I guess for now, my name is Brian Stratton.
And mine is Rob Milne.
And mine is Sarah Stratton.
And my name is Barbara Al.
And two of us will see you next week for next month.
I would love to ruin the magic.
I love all of
I'm
the
about to musk
all of the obstinate answers. Wow, jeez.
That was my favorite line of the night. I don't know how you can keep that one in there, but I think you should.
That's gonna go. We'll just put that in the bloops at the end.